Welcome to Shattering This, the program devoted to the largest segment of society, to those who have come to realize that all of the world's political, every religious, military, economic, and media institution is corrupt, that all of them are counterproductive, and that none of them can be fixed. Our phone number, if you would like to engage in a discussion about these things, toll free, 877-300-7645, especially on a day which celebrates militarism, Veterans Day. It is a black day around those who know the truth, that the military is not a source of freedom. They deprive people of freedom. They aren't a source of free speech. There is no free speech allowed in the U.S. military. And if you tell the truth about the military, you will be publicly crucified. No, the U.S. military is not about freedom. They're about submit and obey. They have not engaged protecting America. There is no case where America was invaded that the U.S. military stopped that invasion. I mean, the closest that you could get would be the War of 1812, when the British returned. But in that case, the only time the U.S. military engaged was outside of Washington, and they turned tail and ran. The British went through Washington and burned it to the ground. The War of 1812 was won by militias, because at that point, the country honored the Second Amendment, and the average citizen kept and bore arms. Today, we no longer honor the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, and we have an established military, the very thing that Thomas Jefferson said was the worst possible thing that could happen to a free country. Jefferson realized, as our history proves, that if you have an established military, there will be never-ending war. America, since the first colonists engaged here, has fought 102 wars. That's one war every 4 years. It's been a perpetual state of war because that's what militaries do. Established militaries justify themselves through a never-ending state of war. There are none of those wars that freed America. There's none of those wars that provided America with liberty. Not one. Nope, 102 wars, most based on lies, most repulsively savage, all expensive in both blood and coin, and not a single one of them with an outcome that we can be proud of. Not one. The closest thing that Americans can show some pride in, it's certainly not World War I, because we engaged in World War I to save J.P. Morgan's investments, and we engaged based upon a deliberate lie, the sinking of the Lusitania. And we sent young men to die in trenches for nothing. We cannot celebrate the Civil War. It was not fought over slavery. Lincoln was the biggest racist of all. He never freed a single slave. No, that was a war that prevented freedom. The southern states wanted to withdraw from the Union. Their freedom of choice was disallowed. So all you can do is point to the European and Pacific theaters of World War II, but neither of them was to defend America. And the European theater was to defend Great Britain. And there was no freedom that was replaced. It was given to people over the enslavement of the Germans because we partnered with the Russians and left Europe worse than we found it. because of what Stalin did, not only to his own people, but to all of the countries in Eastern Europe. We made a mess of things. The strategy we deployed was asinine. In the Pacific, the Japanese had not invaded America. They had no intents to invade America. They had no means to invade America. That war was not fought for freedom. Yes, the Japanese bombed a military establishment in Pearl Harbor, and for that, America firebombed some 50 Japanese cities, burning up to 100,000 civilians alive night after night in retribution. But there is no case that can be made that even the Pacific theater of World War II was to ensure American freedom. The Japanese had absolutely no interest or ability in invading and occupying America. So what do you have? Do you want to hang your hat on Korea, where we fought the very enemy that we established in the Pacific theater of World War II, Mao Zedong and Red China? Do you want to tout what the military did in Vietnam, making a bad situation worse, piling lie upon lie, invading the country based upon a lie? The Gulf of Tonkin incident never occurred. And of course, there we sent our boys in to die at the hands of weapons that American companies built for the Soviet Union. Carnage, death, spilt blood and coin, making a bad situation worse. Then you have Afghanistan won, the Jimmy Carter war against Afghanistan, where the holier-than-thou one actually started the war that he protested. Millions died. And at the time, the American CIA under Gates, who now heads the Boy Scouts, and Zbigniew Brzezinski went to the Taliban, whom we rented from the Pakistani government, and told them that we would supply them with all the arms that they and their God Allah would need to go and kill the infidels. We started that war, and we built not only the Taliban into an enemy that we would later go to war against, but also our ally, Al-Qaeda, became a future enemy. So you can't tout Afghanistan 1. You certainly can't tout Afghanistan 2. We made a bad situation worse in every possible way, from the abuse of women to the proliferation of drugs to the increase in terrorism. You can't look at Iraq. We really screwed things up there. We took what was among the freest countries in the Middle East, the country that was least antagonistic towards the United States, and we turned it into a living hellhole. A country with virtually no terrorism, and we turned it into Grand Central for terrorism. We broke that country. We made a mess of things. We gave Iraq to Iran. And then we facilitated the civil war, which is raging there now. And the invasion of Iraq, of course, led directly to the civil war that we're witnessing right now in Syria. Hundreds of thousands dying because we deployed a military that we should not have had in a counterproductive way. The U.S. military is a liability. It is not an asset. You can't point to a single situation where the U.S. military made America freer, safer. Not one. And yet I can point to hundreds where the U.S. military acted in a terrorist way, where the U.S. military made a bad situation worse, where we squandered enormous resources that could have been spent doing so many things that would have been worthwhile, but trillions of dollars squandered, trillions of dollars squandered. We became the merchant of death. the primary supplier of war material. We became the largest military on earth, larger than the rest of the world combined. And all we did is make bad situations worse, broke things, killed people, all while telling ourselves how good we are. Jefferson recognized that militaries create the need for propaganda, for lying to people. And it's amazing how the lie of militarism, the propaganda associated with the military, is the last bastion of mythology that is infecting the majority in our country. The majority have recognized that religion is a hoax. The majority have come to realize that politics is a hoax. The majority have come to realize that you can't trust the economic leaders of this country, particularly the nationalized offices overseeing the economy. They've come to realize that the judicial system is a hoax. They've come to realize that the presidency and Congress are not to be trusted. The last bastion, the only place where the majority is still bamboozled, is the military. It's a control mechanism. If you get people to say, oh, wow, support our troops, look at their great sacrifice, let's honor their great sacrifice, and pretend that they are the best of us when they are the worst, then you get people to capitulate. They'll sacrifice their money to fund the monster. They'll sacrifice their freedoms, freedoms of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of rebellion, all of which are deprived of people with an established military. Jefferson hated it because of the propaganda that has now captivated our nation. He hated the military because of its cost. He hated the military and established military because of the graft that is associated with it. He hated an established military because of what it does in terms of empowering politicians. It's too bad that the wisest man who ever lived in the United States of America, his voice is no longer listened to regarding this monster. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Larry on the line, a good friend of the program and co-host of Yada Yada Radio and the Shabbat program. Hello, Larry. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. How are you today, Yada?
Good. As Scott said during the break, he says, so I guess we're not celebrating Veterans Day.
I'm not.
No.
You know. And I am a veteran. I have to tell you that the overwhelming majority of people that I knew that went into the military were people that mm-hmm. really were looking to get college benefits, you know, mm-hmm. or that type of thing. They were not particularly bad people. They're a pretty good group of guys mm-hmm. that I was with. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, the leaders, though, are the people who run the military are pretty cynical. I mean, they really are. I mean, the way they use troops, the way they use people, the way they use people up.
Mm-hmm. The way they are completely dishonest, too, about how people are sacrificed and die in that military.
Oh, yeah. Well,
they
always
lie.
There's thousands of these, but the other day I was watching the History Channel and they were talking about Warsaw.
Yes.
When the Red Army, Army had surrounded Warsaw and the of course, you know, the Axis powers were in there, the Nazis were mm-hmm. in there. And they were right outside Warsaw, and so they radioed in and told them, go ahead and start the rebellion. You know, we're camped 10 miles outside the city. And, 50,000, and they knew that they were predominantly pro-Western, picked up arms, and, there were arms that they had taken, and they attacked the Nazis, and they had taken two-thirds of Warsaw when in came, you know, the Panzer tanks and so forth, and they had nothing to fight those tanks with. So they sat there and they were waiting for that Red Army to come. What do you think happened there? Nothing. The Red Army sat there and let them be slaughtered.
Right.
And the reason they wanted them slaughtered was because they wanted pro-communist people inside Warsaw. And so they just, that's how they thinned out all the Westerners. They just had them all wiped out they just set them up and had them killed. That's the kind of type of cynicism you're going to see from leaders in the military. I mean, that's just
both
true.
Sides. Yeah,
yes, on both sides. I mean, I just happen to pick. It doesn't matter who I pick. I mean, that's just an example of how bad
the Red Army was as ruthless as people could possibly be. I mean, when the Red Army finally came back through Germany, because the Germans were so ruthless, they raped every woman in sight.
Oh, yeah.
This total scorched earth, and any German man... they hauled off into prison, and they kept them in prison for 20 or 30 years after the war was over. I mean, you can't be more disgusting than was the Red Army, and they were America's allies. You know, we were willing to partner.
We funded them.
We provided weapons, we provided bullets, we provided food, and to a large degree, we are responsible for the carnage that they perpetrated on the world, and to a large degree, they were worse than the Nazis.
Oh, we saved Mao's life and put him in charge over in China. I mean, it's kind of amazing, you know, this beacon of hope. That basically is taking, you know, young men and women, and using them like bastard stepchildren.
Oh, of course.
To take from others what doesn't belong to them.
Right.
And that's really what our military does today. And when I see these posts and I hear these phrases like, home of the free, thanks to the brave. If you're talking about the militia in 1776, maybe so, you know.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about the fact that we would invade Vietnam or Korea or Afghanistan, and that's got anything at all to do with my personal freedoms, that's insane on its face.
Yeah, it's the myth of the military providing freedom in America is so repulsive. It's pervasive, but it has absolutely no basis in historical truth. I mean, you can't point to an example where it makes sense, and it is absolutely possible to fool all of the people. I mean, virtually every American is absolutely led astray, believing a lie regarding the U.S. military and gleefully goes along with that lie. So it's possible to fool most everybody, most all of the time. We'll be back with Larry in Shattering This. Welcome back to Shattering This. We're having a conversation with Larry about the myth that this is the land of the free because of the brave. And they're doing so on Veterans Day. Larry, you know, I have no argument with the idea that back some time ago, maybe 20 years ago or more, that the average enlistee in the U.S. military was a pretty decent individual looking for help with the college education, the GI Bill. So they were doing it for financial reasons, really, to get financial help to pay for their education. I don't think that's the case anymore. And one of the signs that there's actually two signs that's not the case anymore. One is that you've got 600,000 veterans now that are claiming post-traumatic stress syndrome, largely to take $6,000 a month from the U.S. government and its taxpayers. Good, honest
people.
When
I heard that figure, astounding. That's astounding. I never realized that. That sounds almost like a scam. to me.
It is a scam. Oh, of course, it's a scam. $6,000 a month.
It's a scam.
Now, I'm going to tell you that there are those who would have been deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan, but that's a tiny fraction of that number, who could be stressed by the fact that they were lied to about the purpose of that mission. I mean, everything about the Afghan and Iraqi invasions was a lie. The whole thing was counterproductive. And, you know, being there and watching seeing a friend and someone that you're serving with blown to bits for a lie would have a tendency to, scramble your brains
a bit. Not just that. I mean, you had people going, being told to go out and get a kill, and they'd go shoot a guy on a bicycle.
Right.
I actually heard Marine talking about this, and he was in pieces over that. He said, you know, I literally went out and murdered people in order to get, you know, a kill.
Right.
You know, we did not go in there looking to help them. We went in there looking to take oil. And I say we, I don't even mean we, because we aren't involved in it. The average military guy isn't involved in it. But the powers
I don't think Iraq was about oil. I think Afghanistan was about oil. In fact, I know that Afghanistan was about oil. That George Bush and prior to him, Bill Clinton, were negotiating with the Taliban for the rights to build a pipeline down western Afghanistan, right, because the second largest oil and gas reserve in the world is under the Caspian Sea. It is landlocked to us. It's available to Russia. It's available to China, but it's not, and it's available through Iran, but the only way to get it to a free water port is through western Afghanistan and then through Pakistan. And so we negotiated with the Taliban for the rights to build that pipeline, and then George Bush decided that, you know, the imbecile that he was from a business point of view, that he welched on the agreement, told the Taliban that, you know, you're going to accept a whole lot less, or we're going to take the rights through a carpet of bombs. So you can have a carpet of gold or a carpet of bombs, and the Taliban didn't trust George Bush, and they said, pound salt, and we invaded Afghanistan for the express purpose of building that pipeline. Our first troops in there in western Afghanistan tried to clear a roadway to support the building of that pipeline, and yet the Taliban just menaced them so badly that it was impossible to build a roadway, and we ultimately gave up on the pipeline.
I cannot tell you exactly why we went in Iraq, but we don't go into Iraq, and we don't go into Syria, and we don't go into Libya because we're trying to free people. There's always an ulterior motive, and what those motives are, I may not know. Okay,
I think that's above my pay grade here. I think the invasion of Iraq was to support the military. The military wants to fight. You know, that's how
I think that would be to support the people that got stock in the companies that maybe make those things. It's the squandering of money. I have a question here for you.
By the way, you know, on that regard, George Bush made his personal fortune. Now, he inherited money from his daddy, Prescott Bush, who was in partners with George Herbert Walker, and they were the primary financiers of Adolf Hitler. And that's how the Bush family made their money. Mm-hmm. But Senior Bush, King George I, he added to the family fortune because of political appointments. He was in a position to earn the trust of the Saudi Arabians. He managed the Saudi Arabian investment portfolio, including bin Laden's portfolio, through the Carlyle Group, an investment banking firm outside of Washington that specializes in companies making war materials. And he invested their money in those companies. And then King George I declared war on Iraq so that the U.S. taxpayer would spend fortunes and make fortunes
on
not only
material
for those companies, But for those investors, the Saudi Arabians, who had invested in those companies.
Yeah,
so if you're looking for nefarious reasons, those are the nefarious reasons. So it's indirectly oil because we paid them, we allowed them to steal the American refineries over there, and they didn't nationalize them. They privatized them through the warlords, the Saud family, and then we enriched them. Their oil money, their ill-gotten gain, by declaring war on Iraq and driving up the value of those stocks. So
it's shocking the reality of our history. And
it is.
To get people to wave the flag and let's be patriotic and let's go do this when there's really just money being made hand over fist. Yeah, it's always about enrichment. Now, I've got a question. Right. This is kind of off the topic, and this is going on in right now to a group of people who's listening to the show, but one of them brought up Hanukkah and Maccabees.
Yes.
And what I explained is to the extent that I could, is that Maccabees is kind of a history. It's not scripture.
Correct.
It was basically two Jewish sects fighting over power.
And, yes, under the control of the Greeks, and it really was the two religious groups trying to determine should they be more loyal to the oral law, the traditions, or should they adopt the enlightenment of the Greeks, and which element was going to prevail, which religious element was going to prevail. And so it was a power grab amongst those two groups. And ultimately, both sides vied for power, and at certain times one prevailed over the other. But the whole miracle
Chad Young brought
Hanukkah
up with Yahusha in celebrating Hanukkah. And he wasn't celebrating Hanukkah.
No,
it was a mention
he happened
to be in Jerusalem during Hanukkah.
Right.
Is what I understand.
Yeah, during the Festival of Lights, that he happened to be in Jerusalem. He was in Jerusalem a lot.
Mm.
And so what you have is a mention, and I've forgotten which one of the four books. If it's in Yahu Kanan doesn't have much to say about anything that transpired prior to the discussion in the upper room. I mean, there really isn't a lot of biographical information in Yahu Kanan, but Yahu Kanan is the most heavily edited of all of those eyewitness accounts, or both. There's only two eyewitness accounts, all there is a mention that he was in town, which is something that he did
regularly.
It's Yahu Kanan
10:23. I just looked it up. 10:22:23, and it really doesn't say he was celebrating Hanukkah. And again, they are heavily copy edited. And the miracle of the oil was a fraud. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's stupid. The idea that God's going to support one religious faction over another, and that his great miracle isn't going to be to engage in any material way, that his great miracle is that there's going to be a lamp in one of the two religious factions, that the oil is going to burn more efficiently for a longer period of time than the oil in somebody else's lamp, and that's his great miracle, and he wants you to celebrate that. I mean, when you think of the miracle of Pesach, of Passover, the miracle of matzah, of unyeasted bread, one that makes us immortal, the other one that makes us perfect, the miracle of Bukurim, which causes us to be adopted into Yahweh's family, the miracle of Shavua, which causes us to be enriched and empowered. And then you want to compare that to this this legend that God showed his support for one religious side over the other by having
these the very people he rips now
and,
the
and,
very
and
religious
lamb?
People he rips to
oh,
death.
Oh, of course. I mean, it's stupid beyond imagination that people think that is something that God wants us to celebrate. But you're right. Maccabees are historical accounts. They're not inspired. There's no prophecy in them. They don't stand up to the test that's provided in Devarim as to what things were inspired from Yahweh. But it is, I'm not going to say so much interesting history. The influence on Judaism and how Judaism eventually moved from a priestly religion, which, of course, Yosha spoke against, to a rabbinical religion, and through, you know, during the time that he was in Israel, there were three main divisions of the religion. There were the Essenes, there were the Sadducees, and there were the Pharisees. The Pharisees were the ultra-Orthodox conservative view of the religion, where the Sadducees were quite liberal by comparison. And the Essenes would be more like monks, we're just going to withdraw. And they were, the Essenes actually were longing to for the righteous teacher, which was the losing party in the Maccabean revolt, was their fixation was on that. And the opening of the Sermon on the Mount, where Yosha is talking about blessed are those, and then you have heard, it's all to dismiss those three religious sects. So yeah, he was opposed to all of them. And today, there's only one surviving form of the religion, and that's the Pharisaic rabbinical Judaism. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking to Larry about Maccabees and that particular time, as well as Hanukkah. And I would say pretty much universally, Larry, that that Hanukkah has no redeeming value whatsoever, that it is a complete fabrication. And has no merit, nothing we can learn from it, nothing we can gain from it. I would ignore it. In terms of the Maccabees, though, there is something we can gain from it. We can just see the Greek influence over Judaism. For example, the yarmulkes that religious Jews wears, that's a sun disk symbol. It was picked up during the Greek period, where they were Alexander, and the Greeks prevailed over Israel. So there are lots of Greek influences. To a large degree, Gnosticism, which is a both Greek philosophy and Greek religion, influenced Judaism. It's called Kabbalah, but that form of spiritualism is Greek philosophical in nature. So you can pick up historical influences over the religion. But, you know, today the religion that prevailed back then doesn't exist. Starting with Rabbi Akiva in about 132, 133, he was a shrewd dude. And he saw to it that the only surviving form of Judaism was the form that he was in charge of, rabbinic Judaism, and that's the only form of the religion that's practiced today. And there's various strains of rabbinic Judaism, you know, ultra-Orthodox, Orthodox, and Reformed, but it's all rabbinic Judaism.
I have another person in here asking me today about Thanksgiving as well, and my take on Thanksgiving is that there's no real religious anything attached to it.
There isn't in terms of American Thanksgiving, right? I mean, were there harvest festivals that were celebrated by pagans? Yes.
Harvest festivals celebrated everywhere by everybody for any number of reasons.
By everybody, as a matter of fact, with seven Moed Mikre, they're harvest festivals. Now, they're not so they're. In those festivals, the crops that are harvested are all symbolic of souls, but they are called harvest festivals by Yahweh. So I don't see anything wrong with a harvest festival. And Thanksgiving really wasn't established as a harvest festival. The first Thanksgiving was established not by the Puritans, and it wasn't at Plymouth Rock. And the fact is, the first colonists were ruthless against the Native Americans. The first Thanksgiving was celebrated at the Berkeley Plantation in Virginia. And it's a result of Lincoln wanting McClellan to attack Richmond. And he went down to McClellan to try to nudge him to attack fellow Americans at Richmond and wipe them out so that he could, you know, control all of America as opposed to half of the original colonies. And the death toll that McClellan troops were suffering and such was horrible, and Lincoln declared a day of thanksgiving when he reached some kind of an accord with McClellan. Never ended up materializing, but modern Thanksgiving was first celebrated at the Berkeley Plantation in the midst of the Civil War and enacted by Abraham Lincoln. Now, when, you know, in our situation, like yours, it's because the nation gives the Thursday and Friday off, and all businesses do, all universities do, it's a opportunity for my son, son-in-law, and youngest son all to come and spend 4 days together as a family. And so we capitalize on the fact that everybody is off and can come together at that time. And so we use it for that. That's a celebration of time we can all come together because of the national holiday. Not because it's a national holiday. It's just because everybody is free at that time. They're not beholden to employers or universities. But, Larry, the in terms of just people's concern over it, because, you know, there's we obviously distance ourselves from Easter and Christmas as far as we possibly can. I just don't see the religious baggage associated with Thanksgiving that some do. And, you know, if you're bothered by it, you think it's religious, then by golly, don't celebrate it.